matter if the soul in question belongs to a different socioeconomic class? Does it matter if the soul in question has a criminal record? Does it matter if the soul in question is educated or ignorant? It doesn't seem to matter much to God.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Good morning. It's great to see that children's group grow, isn't it? Amen. Start by telling you, I have a lot of sympathy for something that I once heard George Lindsay say. George Lindsay is the actor who played Goober in the old Mayberry TV series. He talked about growing up poor. He said, for one thing, he said, my parents bought me clothes a little at a time, over time, so I could finally leave the house without being naked. He said, it started, they bought me a hat so I could look out the window. And I was not that poor growing up, but I can tell you most of my growing up years, I had exactly one set of clothes until I got big enough to get hand-me-downs from older uncles, and I still love hand-me-downs. Or I got old enough to work and earn money and buy my own clothes, and I still love hand-me-downs. But the thing that Lindsay said that I really sympathized with when he spoke of being poor, he said, I was 15 before I knew macaroni wasn't meat. We ate a lot of macaroni in the Bailey house of my youth. We had macaroni and cheese. We had macaroni with tomato sauce. We called that goulash. We had macaroni and cheese with hamburger. We called that stroganoff. We had macaroni and cheese with Spam. We called that macaroni and cheese with Spam. We had macaroni salad. We had macaroni with tuna. I didn't figure it out until later. Mom and Dad were raising five kids on Dad's day labor wages, and macaroni was cheap. So we had a lot of macaroni. File that away for a little while. A friend of mine in the congregation told me this week how he lost a hearing aid. He was riding a lawnmower, and the jolting and jostling bounced it out of his ear. And you know, lawnmowers are loud, so you wouldn't notice the loss of a hearing aid right away. He noticed it later, and he said to me, he said, if I don't find it, I'm going to have to face the music, by which he meant go to the Veterans Administration and say, you know that hearing aid y'all just spent $5,000 on? I lost it. You can imagine a VA functionary asking, well, did you look for it? How hard did you look for it? In this case, my friend could at least say, well, I got out a metal detector and swept the yard. That's looking pretty hard. Last week, we began the study of the 15th chapter of the Gospel according to Luke, and we saw that as Jesus preached the good news of the kingdom of heaven, that tax collectors and sinners, it says, came to hear him and kept coming to hear him in increasing numbers, much to the dismay of the Pharisees. Now, I feel like the Pharisees might have felt different about the whole thing if Jesus preaching to the assembled sinners had a little different character. For instance, if Jesus had thundered at them and said, look here, you filthy, scum-sucking, bottom-dwelling sinners, God's about had it with you. I think the Pharisees would have been on board. But that was not the kind of message that Jesus preached. If you cared to go back just one chapter to the 14th chapter of the Gospel according to Luke, you'd get something more characteristic of the sermons that Jesus gave them. He talked about a rich man who prepared a big dinner, and he invited a lot of fine and influential people to come to the dinner, but one after another they made lame excuses. I can't come because I have this to do, and I can't come because I have that to do, and none of them came, these fine and influential people. So the man said, I will go out into the hedges and I will invite / compel the day laborers to come. And they'll be glad to come anyway. They'll be glad to come. And they were glad to come. And they filled his house and sat at his table for his great feast. And he said, about those people who declined my original invitation, let it be known that they will never taste so much as a scrap from my table. See, both the Pharisees and the sinners the Pharisees were concerned about were astute enough to understand the gist of that story. And so the sinners were happy, the Pharisees less so, and they grumbled. And Jesus told them a story we looked at last week about a man with 100 sheep who lost one. And now Jesus tells them a story that Scott read for us today about a woman who had 10 coins and she lost one. And in some respects, it's just the same story over again. And in some respects, it differs. For instance, the ratio has changed. The lost sheep was 1 out of 100. The lost coin is 1 out of 10. When something is 1 out of 10, chances are it is more precious by a magnitude of order than something that is 1 out of 100. In the next story, the ratio will change again to 1 out of 2. But the lost coin is 1 out of 10. Some years ago, and I am sure Michael will remember this because she was very upset about it at the time. Some years ago, Michael, you lost $60. It was Christmas time. You remember this? Yeah, I thought you would. She lost $60 at Christmas time. It was part of the money that had been set aside for shopping, and she was doing some of the shopping, and when she got from one store to the next, the money was just gone. She took her purse and unzipped it and emptied it and turned it upside down and shook it. If she could have done it, she would have picked the car up and turned it upside down and shook it, looking for that money. She wanted to find the money. Now, we went back. She came home so upset. She had already spent money on postage and cards and special Christmas groceries and decorations. This was strictly present money, and we still have not reached the point where we can just snap our fingers and forget $60. But this was long enough ago that all three kids were home and young, and we made less money then than we make now, even adjusted for inflation. And we had limited funds to buy presents, and this $60 fell right out of the presents money, and Michael was just upset. Enough so that we got back in the car and went to the store where she knew she had last had the money and the store where she first knew she didn't have the money. And we talked to the cashiers and we searched the parking lots. Y'all can guess how that turned out. The money was just gone. Michael shed tears over that money. Not because she cared so much about money, but because she cares a lot about Christmas. But whatever happens, if anybody ever had to ask Michael, how hard did you look for that money? She could answer honestly, I looked hard. Because she did. Value. Most of your Bibles will simply say that the woman in question had 10 coins. Some versions will designate 10 silver coins. Jesus actually named the particular coin in question. He said the woman had 10 drachmas. Now you should understand that drachma is a Roman coin. It was equivalent to the Jewish coin, the denarii. Both were based on the same idea. They were one day's wage to be given to a man who had done one day's work. And with one drachma, you could get enough food to feed one family, shelter one family, and have just enough to set by so that over the long term you could clothe and see to other expenses for that one family. One coin, one day, one family. That was the idea. You can calculate the comparative worth of such a coin in modern terms pretty easily. $20,000 for a family is pretty much poverty these days. But if you take $20,000 and you divide it by the 365 days in a year, not worrying over the partial day or leap years or any of that, you come up with $55 a day. A family who makes $20,000 essentially has $55 a day for food and transportation and clothing and heat and insurance and whatever else we think is important and essential. $55 a day is what you have to spend on it. If a family brings in $50,000 per year, the daily take comes up to $137 each day. $137. The day laborer of the Bible was not intended to be poverty-stricken. But everybody understood that he was never going to be more than modestly comfortable either. So let's put the family of the day laborer in there at $30,000. At which point, our understanding of the value of the drachma comes to $82 a day. $30,000 a year, $82 a day. That's what you have for food, shelter, clothing, transportation, insurance, medical care, whatever you think is essential. You have $82 a day to get it. I imagine that's a pretty fair understanding of the drachma from our perspective. So, Susie, you have $820 with which to face the world, and you lost $82. What will you do? You'll tear the house apart to find it. Break out the lamp, get the broom, sweep the corners, move the furniture. You will find, if it is there, that $82. There's another thing to be considered, though. We have to remember Jesus' real audience for this parable. He is not now speaking so much to the tax collectors and sinners who have turned out in numbers and over whom the Pharisees are so disgusted, but he is speaking to the Pharisees themselves. And you may recall, I explained last week, a man had to be wealthy before he could consider being a Pharisee. The lifestyle of the Pharisee required a lot of funding. The Pharisees were not living on day coins handed out for day's labor. They were the people handing out day coins to other people for day's labors. The Pharisees were in at least what we would figure today a six-figure income bracket. If a person brings in $250,000 a year and you divide that income by 365 days of the year, you have $685 for a day. The Pharisee would not see the loss of $82 the same way that the family of a day laborer would. Still another consideration, Jesus named the coin. He was quite familiar with the Jewish denarii, but he named instead the Roman drachma. The Pharisees wouldn't have any Roman drachmas. That coin had the image of the pagan Roman emperor who claimed to be a god on it. And his image was on that coin because he claimed to be a god. And the Pharisees regarded the coin as unclean, and they figured if they touched it, they would be unclean too, so they didn't want any dirty, filthy, impure, pagan drachmas. If they saw one, an $82 coin, laying in the dust of the street, a Pharisee would not bend over to pick it up, because it would be impure, profane. And if their business drew in any drachmas, the Pharisees would not handle that. There would be somebody else whose job it was actually to touch those things and exchange them for denarii, or get enough of them together to exchange them for temple shekels or something like that just as quickly as possible. So how many drachma did a Pharisee want? None. None at all. You see why Jesus chose this particular coin. It represents the sinners, his acceptance of which troubled the Pharisees. They would sneer at such a coin, in part for the piddly amount of its commercial worth, and in larger part because of its unclean pagan nature. But a woman from a less privileged situation with kids to feed would feel entirely different about the matter. And a woman living in the kind of dark home with few windows and no electric lights common when and where Jesus spoke would break out the lamp and the broom and take everything apart and find that coin, because $82 is $82 and it buys a lot of macaroni. And then there's someone else who places yet another value on the run-of-the-mill sinner. There is God, who looks down on the sinner, which again, this is the mistake the Pharisees made. When God looks down on sinners, he's looking down on all of us. There is God who looks down on the sinner and considers us of such value that he would give his only begotten Son, if that would make it possible that at least some sinners might be saved. I believe that if God knew, and he would know because he knows all things, if God knew that the giving of his Son would result only in the salvation of one sinner, pick your sinner, say that the sinner is Andy Mickelson. If God knew that you would be the only one saved, I believe he would still have given his Son. Because there is rejoicing in heaven and with the angels of God when one sinner, any sinner, even only one sinner, repents and comes to salvation. What is the value of a lost soul? To the mind of God, that value is infinite. What is the value of that same soul to us? And does it matter? Should it matter? The color of the skin that houses the soul? Or the nature of the language that comes forth from the mouth that expresses the soul? Or whether or not that particular soul has caused us any specific trouble, frustration, or sorrow? Does it matter if the soul in question belongs to a different socioeconomic class? Does it matter if the soul in question has a criminal record? Does it matter if the soul in question is educated or ignorant? It doesn't seem to matter much to God. I submit that it should matter a whole lot less to us. Come the day in the world to be, there will be souls missing. I accept that. Straight is the way, narrow the gate, and few that find it. But I wonder if it will ever come up in eternity, those missing souls. So-and-so, you know, they're not here. And we'll just have to make the acknowledgement. We know the truth. They're not here because they were lost. Lost. And I wonder if God will ever ask, well, how hard did you look for them? Holy smokes. Break out the lamp. Grab a broom. The lost need to be found.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.